Word to Psalm 142. We're going to be reading that psalm and looking at that this beautiful Lord's Day morning. And we're glad that you're here on this holiday weekend and that you have set aside time for what's important in worshiping our Lord. This Lord's Day, we're going to be studying Psalm 142 this morning about dealing with problems in our lives and how we handle struggles. Looking at a time when David was going through a tremendously difficult time. And Lord willing, this evening, we'll be looking at Psalm 30, where David talks about how we handle it once we've come through a problem or trouble. Have you ever been down in a cave? I think most of us have. And if you haven't, let me encourage you to do that sometime. But on every cave guide, every cave tour I've been on, and I've been on quite a few. When I was young, I used to enjoy doing that and have even gone on the behind-the-scenes tour at Mammoth Cave where you do like 6 hours of spelunking and crawl through all these tiny passages. And that was years back, but I don't know if I'd want to do that now. But it was fun. But when you're in a cave tour, the cave guide at some point will turn off all the lights, right? And he'll tell you, put your hand in front of your face, and it's the utter darkness. Think about being in a cave. But there's no electricity. It's damp, and it's wet, it's cold. But you're on the run for your life. Your enemies have been surrounding the pass all around, and you have found this cave that you know well, that is your hiding place. And you're there, and you're in desperate need because you fear for your life, and you're on the run, and you feel like you have only done right things. You're not there for a wrong reason. You're not a criminal. You're not an outlaw. You're not like Jesse James hiding out in a cave. But you are a righteous person. In fact, what you did was saved Israel. You killed the Goliath. And now the king has been jealous of you and your accolades. So because of his jealousy, because of his fears, he has sought you and is trying to put you to death. And the force of the king's army is chasing you. And you've come to the cave. As the title of this psalm says, the cave. Not just the cave, you've come to the cave. The cave that you know. And in this psalm, the cave represents for us our own caves. You see, you may not be hiding out this morning in fear of someone trying to kill you, but you're going to experience some times in your life that are cave-like moments. Times of high anxiety. Times of darkness. Though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, David said in Psalms 23. Times of depression and loneliness. Times of grief, discouragement, and anxiety. You see, we all have our own caves. Lee Strobel, he writes that people today will admit any problem, drugs, alcohol, divorce, but there's one admission that people are loath to make, whether they're a star on television or someone who fixes TVs in a repair shop. It's just too embarrassing, too penetrating, too deeply to the core of who they are. People don't want to admit that they are sometimes lonely. Loneliness is such a humiliating malady that it ought to have its own political correct euphemism. Relationally challenged, he says. Another article in USA Today from 2004 says that Americans are becoming lonelier and lonelier. This was 10 years ago, but they said going back to 1985, and from the 20 years from 1985 to 2005, that signs are that Americans are becoming more isolated. It said the average American said in 1985 that they had three people they could confide in. But in 2005, the average American only said they had two they could confide in. Some 80% said they only had family that they could trust or confide in. And some said that they had to depend solely upon a spouse. What's interesting is, and I've talked to numerous people about this, and you have too, I'm sure, that we are becoming more of a connected generation than ever before, with all of our social media resources and the ease of our phones to talk and text, and we have all these ways of connecting, but we are living in a society where there are massive cities and more people, and we have people everywhere. Yet we don't know one another. And we don't have close confidants and friends, and we don't really relate to one another because it's often through superficial means. It's not face to face. And so we're living in a society where people are struggling with loneliness. And David is dealing with this issue. And in this psalm, he's going to famously say, "No one cares for my soul." David is going to issue in verses 1 and 2 a hurting plea. As he cries out in the cave, he says, "I cry out to the Lord with my voice. With my voice to the Lord I make my supplication," or "I plead for mercy. I pour out my complaint before Him. I declare before Him my trouble." Notice he says twice in verse 1, "I cry out with my voice." Now this is an audible prayer. Most of the time our prayers are silent prayers, aren't they? But you know, it's good sometimes to pray audibly. In fact, I believe that in ancient times they often prayed audibly more, even when they were by themselves. And some people do that still, and it's a good thing. Hannah, in the story of Hannah, is going to be praying, and her lips are moving, but the words are not coming out. And Eli thought that she was drunk because he didn't understand. He couldn't hear. But what it was is her heart was so in tune, her heart was so grieved that she was praying, and it's like words were just coming out. And sometimes we're like that, aren't we? When we're so moved in prayer, we're so struggling with some issue in our life that it just comes out. Sometimes it comes out when we're talking to someone else. We're like, "Oh, I can't believe I said that." Because it comes from our heart. Now, David's in this cave all by himself. No one else is there. And if you've been in a cave, you think about the echoing. You think about the reverberating of the sound back and forth and the hollow nature of it. He says he's crying out. He's crying out with a loud voice. He's pleading for the Lord to help him. It's a heartfelt cry. He cries out with his voice. He cries out. Notice what he's praying about. Three key words are used to emphasize what he's praying about. He's praying about mercy. He says, "I plead for mercy." The King James says supplication. He pleads for the Lord to intervene, for the Lord to supply what he needs. He pleads for mercy. You see, he wanted to be shown favor, to be pitied. He needed God desperately. And then he prays about his complaint. This is his problem. He lays out his problem. This is what he is troubled about, what he's anxious about. He says, I voiced my complaints. The Bible says, 1 Peter 5, verse 7, that we are to cast all our cares upon Him, for He cares for us. We are to lay out our burden. I sometimes encourage people, and I've done this, that sometimes when we are struggling, you know, it always seems that it's when you're laying in bed and you're trying to sleep and you just can't sleep because something's worrying you, it's bothering you. Sometimes we need to visualize those burdens, those problems, and we're like pouring them into the hands of God. That's what he's saying. He says, "I'm voicing my complaint. I'm giving my complaint to God, my burden." The next word that he uses is trouble. And he modifies the word trouble with the personal pronoun, "my." It is my trouble. It's not just Saul's trouble. This is my trouble. He says it's my trouble. He's not trying to pass this off as some generic problem. He's taking specific trouble to the throne of God. You know, sometimes we need to name what is our trouble. What is our complaint? Lord, this is my problem. Lord, this is what I'm struggling with. This is my trouble. Now, Lord, I know it may not be someone else's trouble, and you may not even think it's that big a trouble. It may not be a problem for someone else, but Lord, it is my trouble. It's a hurting plea. But then notice, David is going to speak about the harmful path. The harmful path in verses 3 and 4. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. In the way which I walk, they have secretly set a trap or snare for me. David says, and you pick up on the figurative image that he's using with the cave. If you can picture a cave and you think about this hidden cave, you know that there had to be all kinds of paths leading to it. And apparently this was a cave that David knew the secret path to it. But he's fearful because, you know, you can't live in a cave without supplies. You gotta at some point leave the cave and go get food, or someone's got to bring you food, and you need some things to necessitate life. And he's fearful because he's talking about when he leaves the cave, he knows that on all the paths there are traps set by his enemies trying to ensnare him. You know, his enemies have laid these traps for him. What David seems to be saying for our own life is that we're going through life's path. Each of us have a path that we're on. We have a path that we're on. And, you know, you're at a certain time in your life and you do your daily habits, your weekly habits, and life has its routine. That's your path. And Satan can learn your path. And Satan can take advantages of your habits. And he puts some minefields along the path, some traps along the path of your life. Some of these things that he puts in our way might be friends or associates that really don't have our best interest in mind, or health problems or concerns, or all the worldliness that's out there and all the entertainment, all the distractions that are out there. He puts all these traps out there for us. And as we're going about the path of our life, David is saying, my path is harmful. He's struggling with this path. And he feels alone. Notice what the Bible says, and this is interesting language in verse 4. He says, look on my right side, or the New King James adds the word hand, and some texts have that in there. Look on my right hand and see. You know, the right side in the Hebrew language was the side of your friends, your confidants, your family, the people you could trust. They were on your right just because you use your right hand and things. And maybe this is where that expression comes from. They're my right-hand man. They're my right-hand man. What David is saying is, I don't have a right-hand man. I don't have anybody that I can trust. He feels alone. Notice what the Bible says. He says, there's no right-hand man, for there is no one who acknowledges me. There's no one who cares for me. Refuge has failed me. And then he famously says, no one cares for my soul. It's a sad statement, isn't it? No one cares for my soul. Now here's the thing. That may not have been true. It probably wasn't true. David had a family. David had a lot of close friends. We know that David's going to have a lot of people go to battle with him. David had a man like Jonathan, who was a wonderful friend of his, that even so gave himself away from the throne to protect David. I mean, he had all kinds of associates that helped him throughout his life. He had some wives. He had some children. At this time in his life, he didn't have some of those things. But David, here's the essence of what I want you to understand. It felt totally true at this moment. Whether it was true or not, the essence of it, he's in this cave all by himself. And he says, no one cares for my soul. Now, we preachers have used this line evangelistically. And we preach the sermon. They go, do you care for people's soul? And certainly we maybe even sing the song, no one mentioned him to me, as we think about the day of judgment and how sad it will be if no one cares about our soul and they never mention Jesus to us. And that's a good sermon. And you know, let me just take a little minute and preach that idea that we need to care about people's soul and about their eternal destination and evangelizing people to Jesus. But let me come back to the idea that this, in the context, David's not thinking about his eternal soul. David is thinking about his person. He's depressed. He's anxious. He doesn't have bread. He doesn't have water. He doesn't have a house. He doesn't have anything. He is alone in a cave on the run from his enemy. And he says, I don't have a right-hand man. I don't have anybody loyal. No one loves me. No one cares about me. He feels lonely. You know, I must admit that I've never felt such a feeling so profound as David must have been feeling. And I'm grateful for that. And I think some of you can relate to that. That we've known the association of always having people we can trust. You know, there's some people that don't have that. There's some people that may have that, but don't feel they have it. They don't, for whatever reason, they don't feel worthy of having it. And they feel like they're alone. And they feel uncared for. I read a story, a true story about a man a few years ago in England, who, really a touching story, he called the Chicago newspaper. His name was James Lee, and he called them and told a reporter that he had sent a manila envelope to the paper outlining his story. The reporter frantically tried to trace the call, but it was too late. When the police got to the phone booth, the man had already committed suicide. In his pockets, they found a child's coloring sheet with a note on it that he wanted it left on his body and buried with him. The drawing was a childish print by his daughter, Shirley Lee, who was killed 5 months earlier in a fire. The girl's mother had died when she was 2. He had to pay people and invite friends or invite other people, strangers, to come to her funeral. After her death, following the mother's death, he was so grief-stricken that he had no purpose and no way of life, that he could not move past his daughter's tragic death. And speaking to the reporter before his death, the heartbroken father said that all he had in life was gone, and he felt so alone. He gave his modest estate to the church where the little girl had attended and said, maybe in 10 or 20 years, someone will see one of my plaques and wonder who Shirley Ellen Lee was, and think somebody must have loved her very much. What a story. What a sad story. You know, there are people out there who don't know a church family. There are people out there that don't have even much of a physical family, who are alone. And they don't believe anybody cares for their soul. So they look for happiness, and they look for joy, they look for purpose in all the wrong things. And they end up becoming more and more miserable because none of those things will provide. Those are harmful paths that Satan puts us on. When we start believing, when we start feeling that no one cares for our soul, it opens up all kinds of avenues for Satan to do awful things like suicide, even in our lives. It's a harmful path. But then notice, David concludes his psalm by saying, I cried out to you, O Lord. I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecution, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me. David has spoken about his hurtful cry, and he's spoken about his harmful path. But now he ends this psalm by talking about a hopeful petition. It's not over, but notice what David is saying is that our circumstances may not change just because we have hope. But hope helps us define and understand better our circumstances. David was still in the cave. He was still on the run. But now he had a renewed perspective, and he had hope, and that makes all the difference. You see, David is going to speak with hope, and he uses four words to define his hope. He says, Lord, please be my refuge. You are my refuge, a common word in the Psalms. Lord, you are the one that can be my shelter. You can be the one who provides and protects me. He says, God is his portion in the land of the living. It is the midst of this difficulty that the Lord is his place of safety. We all need a place of safety we can go to. And let me say something to our young people. It's tragic to think about teen and middle schoolers committing suicide. It's tragic to think about young people feeling like no one cares for them and loves them, so they turn to meth and alcohol. Or they have a girlfriend break up with them and they commit suicide, or they run away. It's tragic. Young people, I want you to know that if you're experiencing things like that, as your body's going through changes and sometimes emotions are all whack and all these friendships and things, I want you to know that you have some safe places to turn to. You have some refuge that you can seek. And Ryan and myself and your parents, there's people you can go to. David says, you are my refuge. The Lord is always there in prayer. Don't keep it all in. You've got to find someone that can be your safe place. We tell our children this when they're young, that you know, if someone touches them or deals with them inappropriately, that they need to find a safe place to tell that to. Well, we as adults and teenagers need that as well. We need a refuge. We need a safe place. And the church is a safe place where you can find confidence, where you can find hope. David says, you are my refuge. And then David says, in a realistic way, he says, attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecution, for they are stronger than I. Notice that David is realistic. David says, Lord, this is not something I can handle. So many times we want to kind of pass off our problems and we go to prayer to God and we say, God, you know, this is my problem. And we're looking for an answer. And then we think if we can get the answer, then we'll solve the problem. And it's like, and men, we're especially bad at this because, you know, if we're fix-it people. And if we can just get the answer, then we can solve it. But what David is saying is, Lord, this is greater than me. It's more than I can handle. It is stronger than I. He says that I am brought very low. I'm down. I'm discouraged. Lord, I want to tell you, I'm depressed. He's realistic. He's transparent. You know, you can fool a lot of people, but one person you're never going to fool is the Lord. Don't try to lie to the Lord in prayer and tell the Lord that you're not very low, because He knows. And He also knows you can't handle it on your own. And so you might as well just go ahead and admit it, where you are and what you need. You see, David is a realist. He says, I'm very low. And then he prays, verse 7, bring my soul out of prison. Bring my soul out of prison that I may praise your name. I'm told that people that are experience depression, that are in grief, will often compare that to being in a prison cell. And grief can be like a cloud that just overwhelms you and it just seems like it's never going to lift. It's like a prison. David says, Lord, I'm in a prison. I'm in a cave. I'm in a prison. And notice what he's talking about is the idea of his loneliness. No one cares for me. And notice how he then connects it with the righteous. He says that, you know, I'm feeling like no one cares. And I want my soul to come out of that. I want to feel like other people care for me. And I want my soul to be lifted from this. I want to have joy and I want to have peace and I want to have happiness again. And he says in verse number 7, I have faith, I have hope that the righteous will surround me. You see, he's come from where he said no one cares for my soul to now he's saying, I know I'm going to be surrounded by the righteous. There's going to be some good people that's going to put their arms around me. They're going to cry with me. They're going to pray for me. They're going to walk with me. The righteous will surround me. And the Lord will deal bountifully with me. You know, that's the hopeful petition that wherever you're at, when you're feeling alone, when you're feeling discouraged, I want you to know that the righteous are still there. That there's people that want to help. That they're going to surround you, that they're going to love you, that they're putting their love and their care and their prayers, and that the Lord is going to deal bountifully with you if you can keep your faith in Him. You see, David is going to move on from this cave. He's not going to stay in the cave the rest of his life, is he? The man who was in a cave all alone will become the king of the nation. The Lord is going to deal bountifully with him. I want to close with this story. Story, another true story that happened in Marianna, Florida. The Twin Caves. They're in what is called Mariette Pond. It's a crystal clear pond that is known for it's diving, and it has a lot of diving there, and there's these caves that people go diving in, but it can be very dangerous. Cave diving is, I'm told, extremely dangerous in reading this story. And there was a 20-year diving instructor who had taken his family there, and him and his daughter, who was 17, were going to go down, and we're going to go in this cave a little bit. And so they go down, and he had dived in some caves before, but never won this dangerous, and he didn't really realize how dangerous it was. And he goes down, and there was a group coming out of the cave who had stirred up the silt. The silt, you might imagine, is that dust particles in the water, that mud and other things that collects, and that causes the water to not be able to be clear anymore. And so once they're going into the cave, they realize that they and the other group had stirred it up pretty good. And so they stop and are going to try to get out, but they had already gone in pretty far and could not see. The visibility was extremely low. And he was separated from his daughter already. But he's able to reach around and find her. And they start trying to work their way out. But he loses her again. And he's hopeful that she is working her way out too. And he is able to get out and he goes up. When he gets to the surface, he realizes that his daughter is not there. Her name is Alexandra Clark. And so the people on the surface say, well, it's extremely dangerous, and he couldn't go, and the people couldn't go. But they said, there's a man, Ed Sorensen, who is a relief and rescue diver and who has dove in this cave many times. And they send for him, and he was
just a real short distance away, and he jumps in the boat and he comes over and he goes down. And Ed said it, he had trouble finding the mouth of the cave, but he found the mouth of the cave, and he goes in, he ties a string, a reel they call it, so that he could find his way out. But he has little hope, or he's fearful that he will not be able to find her. He ends up feeling of one of her legs. And she had found an air pocket in the cave. And she was actually able to breathe some in that air pocket and still had enough air in her tank to get to the surface. And she was relatively calm, and so she wasn't dangerous to him yet and wasn't out of oxygen yet. So they begin to head out, and they have the reel, and they're following the string out. But she gets wrapped in the line. And he actually has to let the reel go, and he has to feel his way out as she's holding on to his arm. And he says even at that point he was still very fearful that they would be able to make it out. But they do make it out to safety. He finds the exit by memory, and they're greeted with cheers once they reach the surface. Now when you think about that metaphor and you think about this psalm, you may be this morning like Alexandria. You might be in a cave often, feeling alone. Maybe you're just coming up for pockets of air sometimes, and you found a few pockets, but then you feel like you're often still drowning in the darkness of whatever you're dealing with. I want you to know that just like Ed came for her and rescued her, David is pleading for the Lord to come and rescue him. That's what the Lord does. The Lord will come to our side, and sometimes we're going to be groping around like Paul talks about in Acts 17 and like Alexandria was, just groping. You can't see. But if we will walk by faith and not by sight, walk by faith and not by sight, the Lord will deliver us. If you need to respond this morning, if you need to put Christ on in baptism to become a child of God, if you need to rededicate your life, come us together, we stand and sing.